Bill 350 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion of the Senator from St. Charles. All those with opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. Senator from St. Charles.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would now move that Senate Bill 350 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Mr. President, Senate Bill 350 is a bill that many of us are, it's an idea, I guess, that many of us are familiar with or have some familiarity with. But going back to the beginning of this year, Mr. President, and the governor's presentation of his budget, he announced his support for this proposal. The proposal to eliminate the renter's piece of the circuit breaker tax credit. The governor, Governor Nixon, on two occasions has convened a bipartisan tax credit commission, and in both cases, that tax credit commission has recommended the ending of the renter's piece of the circuit breaker tax credit. And through their discussions, I was able to look at some of their deliberations. They raised six issues as to why they thought that this credit needed to be this part of the credit needed to be repealed. And I just not read the entire thing, but just lay out some aspects of all six issues. One, they said that there does not appear to be any rational relationship between the 20% of gross rent paid and the actual property taxes attributable to the tenant's rent. Number two, many nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and apartments for older adults are owned by nonprofit corporations or associations. None of these tenants would be eligible to claim the credit, even though their incomes would be similar to those allowed to claim the credit. Three, rent in a particular market is determined by many factors: supply and demand, competition, land costs, utility costs, cost of providing additional services, municipal services, etc., etc. Subcommittee does not believe that property taxes have any significant effect on rents. Rather, landlords tend to charge as much as the market will allow them to charge and still maintain relative occupancy. Number four, real estate taxes on apartments vary widely throughout the state, and each area's property tax rates vary as well. And the credit has a one-size-fits-all. It was developed that way. Number five, many of the facilities which provide housing to renters who qualify for the credit are facilities which enjoyed the low-income housing tax credit, of which there are both state and federal credits, and perhaps the historic rehabilitation credit, both state and federal credits. And other credit programs also may have been applicable to the facility. These tax credits were designed to reduce the cost of the low-income housing facility for elderly and disabled tenants, and thus, in a very real sense, the tenants in those facilities are already receiving the benefit of the state's contribution toward their housing costs. Number six, in short, the renters able to claim the credit do not represent a fair distribution of persons throughout the state similarly situated. Instead, they are persons who have been arbitrarily selected by the language of the statute for the credit's benefit, even though others virtually identically and similarly situated lease their dwellings from nonprofit land property tax exempt landlords. What we would do upon what the legislation calls for is, upon the elimination of this portion of the credit, is to still take the revenue that is attributable to that tax credit and to put it into very worthy programs that currently exist in the state budget. And so the funding would continue to serve many in this population. And as outlined in the governor's budget, a fund would be created equal to the amount that would the dollar figure attributable to this repeal of the credit. Funds would go to the Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Prevention Education Services, would provide a 3% rate increase for prevention and educational services. The Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Treatment Services would provide a rate increase for alcohol and drug abuse treatment. The Division of Comprehensive Psychiatric Services, the Division of Comprehensive Psychiatric Services, well, I guess one is for adult community programs. Another funding increase is for youth community programs. The Division of Developmental Disabilities, $6.3 million would go for a rate increase for developmental disability community programs. So the Department of Mental Health total would be just over $11 million. Then there would be additional funding for community home and community-based services, funding for the area agencies on aging, and then rate increases for nursing facilities and rehabilitation and specialty services. And on all this, which has been plugged into the governor's budget, is equal to $56.6 million, of which I believe the House has included that in their budget, a budget with which they recently perfected. And this bill did pass out of our Appropriations Committee. So I am happy to answer any questions, I otherwise renew my motion.
You've heard the motion of the Senator from St. Charles. Any senator desire to be heard on the motion? Senator from Buchanan, for what reason do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from the 23rd.
Senator, do you yield?
Yes.
Proceed.
Senator, yes, this issue is near and dear to my heart because of what happened a couple of years ago. You remember when the bill came up on the tax credit and...
Right, it was part of the larger economic development bill that included the, you know, at that time labeled the China hub.
Right. And at the time, all I wanted to do was actually have a vote so that I could vote against the reduction of the renters portion. And I ended up having to offer an amendment, and the amendment passed by one vote. I couldn't believe it. I really only wanted to be on record as opposing the idea that we would not give the tax credit to renters, but we would give it to owners. And I still have that position, and the reason is that I believe that the rent is buried in the property tax is buried in the rent. Wouldn't you at least acknowledge that when somebody sells something, all the costs of that something are buried in the price?
I would think that in many cases we make that very argument when we talk about cost. When someone adds a cost to business, that ultimately you pay for it in the cost
price.
Of service.
Yeah.
I think we make that case every day here, and then some people choose to listen to it, and some people say, you know what, I've got no problem sticking it to business. We're going to protect the little guy. And they don't draw that line to where, well, ultimately it's the little guy that pays for the cost, the increased cost of the business.
Listen, I'm going to tell you right up front, I'm not filibustering your bill here. I just want to talk a little bit about...
Okay. Did I sound
no,
impatient?
No, I'm not saying that you even thought that. I'm going to vote against your bill, but I want to talk about why I am so that the other members just can listen and then weigh what we say. If they vote for it, fine.
Do we need to do that as an inquiry, or do you want to speak against
it? I'm doing it as an inquiry with you, and...
Will I be asked to answer any questions?
I don't know. Let's find out.
All
Let's
right.
just go for it. Get started. Let's get started.
All right.
But anyway, don't you think that the cost of the property tax is buried in the rent?
I think that at the end of the day, someone who owns the apartment building and who is renting it out would like their revenue to equal or exceed their expenses.
Right.
And that the property tax is one of their expenses.
Right. And so they're going to charge enough rent to cover their property tax in addition to all the other costs, aren't they?
In some way or fashion, yes, they're gonna recover that. Yes.
So does that not imply that the renter is paying through the rent the property tax?
Yeah, unless it's lined out though, they're paying for rent.
Right.
And sometimes rent includes heat and water, sometimes that's separate.
Well, the thing about is, I understand that if the property tax goes up really, really high.
But what if it's a not-for-profit? I mean, that's what they're saying is that, okay, let's say maybe you're right in theory, but not everybody, you're not understanding the playing field, okay?
Well, I want to understand.
Okay, and that's why you have people in for-profit facilities, you have people in not-for-profit facilities, and they point out we have people who are in facilities of which, what are, we talk about the low-income housing tax credit, now that's $140, $190 million. Talk about the federal credits on that, that we need to have, you know, the House in the past has said, you know, that's an important program. It provides low-income housing assistance. And that's a case that is made here. That's part of this also. Through the appropriations process, we provide a great deal of support to the elderly, to the disabled. And it's just, you know, Meals on Wheels. We've got LIHTC. Just a whole host of programs. You know, Medicaid.
But my question to
are we talking about the big picture or we're talking about one sliver?
No. Well, I mean, your bill, what it does is it divides it into two classes of people. Old people who own a house and old people who rent. That's everybody.
Well, were you here when we adopted the homestead property tax credit?
Yeah, that was I think it was Representative Portwood at the time.
Right, and Senator Gross had it on this. And we actually put an appropriation in the budget because we reimbursed the counties.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yes.
The only way we could get it passed.
I remember
okay,
that.
But it only applied to homeowners. Why didn't we have that apply to renters?
Well, to my way of thinking, it probably should. But the thing is that it may be okay to do what you're doing. There is a difference between homeowners and renters. My chief of staff, who I think is brilliant, told me that owners do have more risk. Renters can move easier because they don't have to sell homes.
Excuse
and he moved me a little bit, but it's not enough to make me like in favor of this. The reason is, in my opinion, is that the cost of the rent is buried. I mean, the cost of the property tax is buried in the rent. And if the property taxes keep going up, yeah, the cost of owning your home is going to go up, and you might have to move if they get too high, but the cost of your property tax of your rental is also going up, and you might have to move if it gets too high. So I just think that it's just not socially just to divide them like that.
Do you support restrictions on, I think there may be a bill coming forward on temporary assistance for, let's say food stamps.
Food stamps.
Should we restrict what people can purchase with food stamps? Should they be able to buy anything with food stamps?
Well, see, my feeling about...
Because if a tax credit is the equivalent of cash...
Well, the question there in my mind is, do we want to require people to be responsible with the dollars that government gives them to help them? And to a degree, I think so. The problem with the food stamp issue is they're able to go to the ATM and get the cash anyway, so to say that they can't use their EBT to buy the product when they can just go to the ATM and then spend the cash to buy the product, it makes it kind of like you're not going to accomplish anything. You're just making it harder for them. So that's a different issue.
What we're doing with this is we're taking that aid, which is a tax credit, we're putting it into other program services, which serve, in many cases, the same people.
That makes me feel better about it, but it's still not just. Because what you're doing is not everybody that can take care, advantage of the tax credit now will get that benefit. And the thing is that in my mind,
well,
it's
if you're
just,
saying it's not just,
it's just
saying
not, it's not equality.
You're saying it's unjust, and I would disagree with you.
Well, it's okay for you to disagree with me. It just seems to me that, you know, the two classes of people are going. You're picking winner and loser here. But
no, it's. Of the tax credit reform that we need to do, I would say moving forward in this makes it even, if we're to entertain this, it makes it more imperative that we are able to make those changes which we put in Senate Bill 120.
I hope, where is Senate Bill 120, by the way?
It is over on the House side. I'm not sure if it's in committee yet.
You think it's going to move,
but,
by the way?
I hope it will.
I hope so, too.
Now, what we were told 2 years ago was that the sunsets on those two large programs were the prevailing factor in our not getting a bill to the governor's desk. And to the credit of many senators here, we moved from that position in order to accommodate the concern of the House, but still ask for significant tax credit reform.
Oh, I think we got
to bring down the overall cap, because that money comes off the top before we ever get to decide what we do with the state's revenue.
We brought it from 300 down to 95. I mean,
yeah,
that's
right.
That's really, really good.
Right.
$205 million of savings there.
Right.
I think that's well worth the tax credits that we added on. But in this case, I just want you to understand why I did what I did, why I want to be able to.
I don't think a winner in this case looks at themselves as a winner. So, you know, I think the objections raised by the Tax Credit Commission are valid.
Well,
so such that I was willing to offer the legislation for this body's consideration.
Well, there are a lot of older people that are renters that no longer will be able to take advantage of the credit.
And there are people who would qualify for the credit don't because of the type of housing that they live in.
Perhaps that's true. Thank you, Senator, for the inquiry.
Further discussion. Senator from the 5th.
Senator Quarter, Senator from St. Charles.
Senator from St. Charles, do you yield?
Proceed. Yes.
Good evening, Senator. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I'm having a rough day today, but I want to talk a little bit about...
Because the mayor was here today?
Yeah, the mayor was here today.
No, I heard about your hearing. I'm sorry.
What did you hear?
I'm sorry I wasn't there.
Okay. Yeah. So, what exactly are you trying to do here again? I know a couple of years ago, we dealt with this whole circuit breaker piece of legislation. I think it was approximately 3 years.
Yeah, the House actually. Yes, they did.
Yeah,
we were working on the House bill, I believe. So they were. It did have passage in the House.
You're right. And what happened? I think if I can recall my memory. We actually excluded those individuals that lived in senior citizen homes. The homes that was receiving any subsidies at that point could no longer receive the circuit breaker. The people that lived in like the senior citizen homes that was receiving subsidies from the government.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the legislation from 2 years ago. I guess it was my basic understanding that legislation was, except for, the repeal aspect was the same. At that time they were trying to eliminate the circuit breaker for renters, and that is what this bill does.
That lived in private.
Now this bill creates the fund, a dedicated fund, which then goes back into that money is appropriated for the services that I outlined.
So the monies that the state will save, it will go towards other senior services?
Correct. It will go.
And what will those services be, Senator?
It's called the Missouri Senior Services Protection Fund. The funding would go to Department of Mental Health would receive $11.189 million. The Department of Health and Senior Services would receive $32.5 million. Nursing facilities would receive $11.9 million, and rehabilitation and specialty services, those last two being the Department of Social Services, in total would receive $12.88 million.
So will those individuals that are impacted by the circuit breaker cut, would they be eligible to receive those services, I mean, those benefits?
I think that two things. One, that some of the people being served by the tax credit receive these services.
They will be eligible.
This is what I believe, that they receive the service. They don't receive a check, but they fall under the services being provided. Okay, but there are other people. I can't say that all of them will benefit. But there are people who currently who meet the same income criteria and maybe live in very much the same living conditions who do not qualify for the tax credit that are also able to utilize those state services and will benefit from the increased funding.
Well, you know, a couple of years ago when we excluded the private senior citizen homes from those that lived in the senior citizen homes from receiving the circuit breaker, my grandmother at that point wasn't eligible anymore. But before, she stayed in a rental property, and she was able to receive like $700. And for her, she's like, at that time, she was 65, 66, one or the other. She really looked forward every year to receiving the $700 so that, you know, she can buy, you know, a new microwave or something of that nature. And then when she went and lived in St. Andrews and she tried to apply, they said she was no longer eligible. And a lot of the seniors that benefit from the circuit breaker, they're on a fixed income. That the income is not adjustable.
Did her income change between the two facilities that she lived in?
Let me say this here. The income is not adjustable. It doesn't go up. It doesn't go down. And so it's like Christmas for a lot of the seniors who receive the circuit breaker. They really, you know, look forward to receiving the circuit breaker so that they can go and purchase a new microwave, or they can go and purchase a new television, because the television, you know, that they had, that they're working with, probably broke down and they just can't afford it. So I really think that, and for whatever reason you're doing it, and I'm not going to judge your reason and your cause behind why you're doing what you're doing, but I think it's a really disservice to a lot of the seniors throughout the state of Missouri that really depend on the circuit breaker.
You illustrate one of the issues with the program. In one place your mother benefited, in the other place she didn't. Her income didn't change.
But I tell you one thing, that next year she couldn't go out and buy nothing for herself. I mean, she couldn't buy nothing extra for herself. She had to just she made sure that she paid her light and gas bill, but there was nothing else she can purchase because she's on a fixed income. And like I said, that $700.
Right, but I don't know your mother, but it might be quite possible. And I apologize for interrupting. Go ahead, Senator. Proceed.
But at any rate, you know, one thing about me, I truly believe at the end of the day, you know, we should keep our hands off children and elderly. I mean, those are the two human beings that I truly believe that we need to fight to protect. And when their quality of life is tampered with by any shape, form, or fashion, you know, that really, you know, it hurts my heart. And I that's why I'm not going to be able to support, you know, your bill. However, I just think that at the end of the day, the seniors that will be impacted by the circuit breaker cuts, that God will find a way for them to continue to live, you know, a productive life and try to get the things that they need even though they're on fixed income. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator from the 4th, what reason do you rise?
Bar the Senator from the 23rd.
Senator from the 23rd, do you yield?
I do.
Thank you, Senator. I was listening to your inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan, and you ended it. You said some people won't be eligible, and some people that currently aren't eligible will be eligible. The second part is when it caught my attention. How are we expanding the program?
Well, what we're doing by creating the Senior Services Protection Fund, we're putting that $56.6 million into services that benefit, that we have in our appropriations budget. So it's new funding for the budget going to the Department of Mental Health, going to the Department of Senior Services, going to the Department of Social Services to serve that entire group.
So,
okay? So, and were you here when I talked about the kind of, I guess, the arbitrary nature of some aspect of how the program works?
Yeah.
That, you know, depending upon where you live, sometimes you qualify, sometimes you don't. Okay, just based on where you live. And, but if you are this basically demographically the same individual, or two like individuals have the same demographic, they would both qualify for those programs that fall under the appropriations, that the programs developed okay. by the state of Missouri to serve those groups.
So will they still have the same income ceiling,
they're existing programs.
Oh, okay.
That we have in place to serve the elderly.
Okay. One other thing, and you'll have to beg my forgiveness here. I was looking.
I can give you that.
That's the, thank you.
We're behind the aisle. We're behind the aisle. We're not in the aisle.
One other thing, and I wanted to.
We did not break protocol.
Sometimes you just shouldn't sit down. One other thing. Obviously, I didn't have the benefit of the committee here.
And that is a point of order.
But you've had, if I look at the committee minutes, we had one person vote in favor of this, and there's got to be 10 or 12 people testify against it.
On what?
In the committee hearing for the bill.
Well, we wouldn't. The bill wouldn't be before us. If the vote was 12-1 against.
I said vote. I meant to say testify. Witnesses. You had one witness in favor of the bill, and there must have been 10 or 12 opposed to it. I'm looking at the Missouri Budget Project, Missouri Association of Area Agencies on Aging, Advocate, Adapt to Missouri, Missouri Senators, Independent Living, Silver-Haired Legislator, Missouri Alliance of Retired Americans, Missouri Associated Social, probably 90% of these are in my district. I didn't hear their testimony. I don't know. Is there a common theme why they're opposed to this?
I think they want the program to exist as is. If that's the case, then we're going to have to make some. We're going to have to reduce some line items in the budget.
I mean, I'm having a hard time connecting here. We've got $56 million in tax credits that were taken away. We're putting $56 million
right,
in the fund.
Right, and this is different. This is different than, well, is it, the low-income housing tax credit. I don't know if you're a supporter of that, if you're not a supporter, if you think it's a good program, but we spend too much on it. But we've been having this argument over tax credits.
Right,
okay.
Right.
I think some of the objections and something that was unsettling for me when we had it on the floor a couple years ago was, you know, the argument that, okay, we were going to cut this tax credit and we were going to provide a benefit for freight forwarders or for the Chinese to bring goods
right.
in the country. I think we had an overall interest in bringing the tax credit, the amount of money being spent on tax credits down. I think it was $680 million a couple years ago.
I think it
okay.
was, yeah.
This is the third largest program. historic preservation. One's the first, low-income housing.
Low-income housing is the first, and then
the low-income housing program, of which provides a great deal of housing. We spend more than 47 other states. Provide these credits. The federal government provides these credits for low-income, for living, a lower cost, subsidized
housing,
right? And that was a point that they outlined here. Okay, so we want to provide assistance for people who are paying rent. Well, we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars every year to build facilities so that people pay less rent.
Well, on this, okay. Well, even on this list that you just gave me, though, some of the home and community-based services, won't that go for rent assistance?
It's possible, but it's probably more formulary than this is.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Senator.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Further discussion. Senator from the 9th.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of the Senator from the 5th?
From where?
The 5th, please.
From the 5th.
I think she's up inside gallery.
Will the Sergeant of Arms please summons the Senator from the 5th? Senator from the 5th is entering the chamber. The senator from the 9th would like to inquire of you. Do you yield to her? Proceed.
Thank you. Senator, how are you? I apologize for calling you off the side gallery. Hope your business here wasn't too important. But I want to go back to a conversation you were having a few minutes ago about your grandmother who moved, I believe it was to St. Andrews, and then didn't qualify for the credit. And I'm not sure whether you remember or whether it impacted your district as much as it did mine a few years ago. But a few years ago, as we were in the House, I started getting a number of calls, as did many of our colleagues, certainly on our side of the state, regarding folks being cut off the renter's rebate. Did you receive any of those calls a few years ago?
I did, Senator.
I will tell you, and it happened to my grandmother as well. What had happened, and this is in direct response to some of the statements earlier about those seniors that happen to live in nonprofit facilities. Sometimes these elderly living facilities happen to be owned by nonprofits, and they then don't pay taxes. What happened a few years ago was that the state had been reimbursing those seniors that lived in those facilities, and a few years ago recognized that they were coming from facilities that happened to be nonprofit that did not pay taxes. And then those seniors were no longer eligible to receive the credit.
That's what happened. That's correct.
It was. And it was a huge deal in my district. We had gotten a flood of calls, a flood of emails, a flood of letters. And as I would go home on the weekends, this was one of the huge issue about folks being cut off the renter's rebate portion or the circuit breaker. We've had this discussion about the circuit breaker the last couple of years. And I am extremely sensitive to the fact, as you talked about your grandmother, having this rebate at the end of the year, and that's the only time of the year that she's able to purchase some of those things she would like to purchase. Now, you happen to have mentioned a microwave or a television, but I will tell you that for some of these seniors, it is the only time they are able to even purchase any real necessities. It may be a furnace. I think we had heard tales of one woman who used hers to replace a furnace or to replace a stove, and she had been using hot plates in her kitchen for quite a while because her stove didn't work and she couldn't afford to replace it.
Electrical
and that was
upgrade.
The only disposable income she had of the year to be able to afford some of those necessities, and not luxuries, necessities, needed by the seniors. So I wanted to certainly talk a little bit about that. And I also wanted to, because we dealt with this a few years ago, even in the House. I do not want this renter's rebate thing to be deemed to be some urban issue.
No, it's not. No.
It's not. As I look at a list here for renter claims by Senate district, true, the 5th district happens to be the district that has the most rebates on the renters. I think it's 9,773. But I will tell you that the district who falls second is actually the 25th district, who has 600,540. You know, so as we begin to talk about those seniors who happen to be affected in various districts, this is not an urban issue. Clearly, many of the folks in my district benefit from it as well. In my district, there happen to be 4,343 seniors, and these are renter claims. These are not the ones that happen to be homeowners. These are renters who happen to claim the circuit, claim the tax credit. Let's see, the senator, the District 27, there's 3,700 seniors who happen to be renters that claim the credit. The 28th District, 3,200. The 30th District, there's 3,100 seniors that happen to claim the renter's credit. In the 20th District, 3,500. In the 18th District, 3,000. Of course, you get to the 14th, who happens to have 5,600. 13th, 3,900. In the 12th District, 2,700. So there are a number of seniors around the state who happen to be claiming the credit. This is not an urban issue. I'm not saying that the folks here, the members in the chamber, already assume that it is. Clearly, it was a problem a few years ago. That it was a true misconception as to who most of the people were that happened to be gaining these tax credits around the state. So
can I tell you a story?
Yes.
About a senior, and you know, now that you know, I'm refreshing my memory after having the last conversation with the senator. When they first decided to cut the seniors off of the circuit breaker, she still lived in her house, okay, but she was about to move on to a non-for-profit facility. And she owned the house, though. She still owned the house, but the house was so bad off that she had to get out of it and move because she couldn't keep the, it was electrical.
Right.
She had an electrical problem. And, you know, when she found out that she was not going to be eligible for the circuit breaker in the near future to take care of her electrical problem in her house, she literally cried. And she cried, and I didn't know what to do. I mean, I felt so helpless. And she was my constituent. And so, you know, when I think back, you know, how she was impacted, and when I think now in the future as to how many other seniors will be impacted, because this would not only impact those that are living in non-for-profits, this right. will impact all of the seniors.
I fully agree. I don't want there to be a misconception that those that are in non-profits are collecting the tax, because they're not any longer.
Right. And right. so now you still have you still have that senior citizen that called me a couple of years ago, who's still in that situation, who still need that, like you said, you know, the basic necessities of life.
Right.
You know, that hot water heater needs to be fixed.
Right.
The electrical, you know, and the plumbing needs to be upgraded.
Right.
And that there, the monies that they receive from the circuit breaker is what really sustain them when it comes to those type of things.
Right. I agree.
So, it's really an unfortunate situation. I hate that we're having this conversation, especially, like I said, when it comes to, I think it's hands-off when it comes to seniors and children, elderly and the children.
I agree.
It should be hands-off. I think that we should always protect the interests of the seniors and the children. And
I agree.
I don't think that this is what's happening here today, but...
Right.
You know, I'm a firm believer that God is over all affairs, and that God will make a way for those seniors that cannot afford.
I agree there too.
The things that they need after this cut.
But I will say too that I was a little disappointed in the budget process to have found out, of course, that the governor had then suggested that we cut this portion. And I will tell you that he must be way more insulated than I am in this process, as maybe some of our members, because I will tell you, last year when we had this issue with the circuit breaker, folks were beating down our doors through emails, telephone calls, when I would go home to my neighborhood and community meetings. This was something that was extremely, extremely important to a lot of folks in my district. And I will tell you, even as much as it's important to a lot of folks in my district, the 4,300 that I have that claim the rebate, there happen to be many other districts that claim, a few others that clearly claim more, as does the third
Senate district who has 4,800. You know, there are many seniors around the state in all of our districts that are claiming these credits. And as I said, it's an issue that I had certainly hoped that we wouldn't have to address this year. Just the emotion and stress that comes along with having to talk to these seniors and having to know how helpless they are at many times. And for many of them, this is really what they depend on at that time of year to be able to sustain themselves, purchase some things that they can't normally purchase, in addition to some of those things that are so vital to just basic safety.
You know, well, Senator, I've had a really bad day today, and this adds to it. So I'm just ready to go home.
I understand. You did have a bad day earlier, didn't you? And I apologize for coming into your office earlier. I had a small joke. I didn't realize that it was that you had been filled with such, I shouldn't say emotion, but such that you were still as sensitive to it as you were at the time. So I again want to apologize for making light of some of those things as I had come into your office earlier.
It's okay. I'm a big girl. I'll raise my hand. I'll get over it.
You are a big girl. I think you've demonstrated that several times. You kind of roll with the punches. But I did want to address that earlier. I know you had talked about your grandmother earlier, and my grandmother was in the same situation, and I knew exactly why that happened to be as the case was, as you explained earlier, because I found my grandmother in the same circumstance, and it was because she was living in a nonprofit, in a senior elderly development that happened to be owned by a nonprofit. And at that point, the state realized that they should not have been issuing this renter's rebate or this circuit breaker to those folks that happened to be staying in those establishments that did not pay taxes. So I wanted to make sure that I had clarified that with the body, as well as potentially reminded you a few years ago, because I had gotten a number of calls and from folks, you know, at home that were very distressed and distraught because they no longer qualified, and that was why. You also talked earlier about some of the things. I think there was some discussion about what the money would be used for. I will tell you that there are a number of things that happen to be used that are being used for provider rate increases. And in as much as I understand that we need to give some consideration to provider rates, and these are worthwhile programs, and all programs that I support, I just do not think that they should be funded through this mechanism. I do not think that they should be funded on the backs of seniors. The 3% provider rate increase, so there's $26,000 going for prevention and educational services. There's $1.3 million going for alcohol and drug abuse treatment. $2.7 million going for adult community programs. $751,000 for youth programs. $6.2 million for developmental disability community programs. Here's the thing. $11.9 million for nursing facilities. $1 million going to home-delivered meals. Those are all worthwhile programs. Those are things that I fully support throughout the process and have since I've been here. I just do not think that they should be funded through this
circuit. And not only that, you know, when I first got here, well, back in 2008, I served on budget, and we were at a $23 billion budget. You know, that's what we had to deal with, a $23 billion budget. And we wasn't even thinking about cutting the circuit break up until, like, I guess 2009,
right,
2010.
Last couple years. Right.
But now here we are. We're at, what, approximately a $25 billion budget?
Right.
And we're saying that now we have to cut seniors. At some point, we have to begin to figure out, as a collective body, the House as well as the Senate, we have to begin to think outside of the box in terms of how we generate revenue for the sole purpose of taking care of those indigent, those individuals, like I said, the seniors and the elderly.
Right.
We're obligated to do that, I think. I believe that. Now, the philosophy may be different from the Republican side, but I truly believe that we're obligated to look out for those that cannot help themselves.
I agree. I have an inherent problem, and I know we have philosophical differences, but I have an inherent problem with creating such tax breaks and tax cuts to corporations, and then we would then cut out this tax, you know, for seniors. I inherently have a very fundamental problem with that.
for people that have the most difficult time being able to help themselves. These are people who happen to be living in the eaves of their life. Many of them have worked all of their life and have gotten to a point in time where they then are no longer able to work. They happen to be seniors and really, really, really rely, even on fixed incomes, on some of those things that they can't afford. And I do. I have a very, very fundamental problem with some of the tax breaks that we have given, and we would then cut this, or I'm almost going to say provide a tax increase, because they clearly are, and I know we keep hearing the argument that these folks are not paying the property taxes directly. Of course they're not. But I will tell you, in real estate, I don't know a single person, I really do not, that happens to rent properties at a loss to them, and all of those costs, whether it happens to be taxes, some of those other things, insurance and all those, are all figured in the rent. They are not calculating rents at a loss to them as a property owner. So thank you, Senator. I know I called you off the side. I'm not sure if you still have.
I know that I'll sleep well tonight knowing that, you know, I stood up for the seniors,
right.
The elderly. And that's truly what it's really all about. You know, we have to begin to, you know, not just look at what lobbyists want us to do. And
right.
We have to look at the human side of what it is we do. And,
right.
And that, look on the wall, nothing is politically right that
it
is morally,
morally wrong. And I
mean, that's profound. That's profound. And I think that it is morally wrong to attack seniors. And
right.
I'm not saying that that's what the senator is doing.
I'm not saying that he's attacking
seniors, but I think that they will be impacted in a major way as a result of this bill. So
right.
Thank you, Senator.
No, thank you for the inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from the 9th.
Thank you. May I inquire of the senator from the 10th?
Senator from the 10th, do you yield to the senator of the 9th? Senator from the 10th, do you yield? To the Senator of the 9th.
I would love to yield. Yes, thank you.
Proceed.
Thank you. Senator, I think you've heard much of the discussion we've had.
I did.
I know you have some thoughts as well. You know, I think I want to go back to the fact that, of course, we have this list here of how many seniors this is actually serving across the state and not just those that happen to be in urban communities. I think I talked about the fact that I think that the 5th Senate District does happen to be number one in the state as far as those rebates that happen to be claimed, but number two actually happens to be the 25th District. And you know, we've got an array of districts around the state that this rebate is really benefiting thousands of seniors in these districts.
Do you know when that information was compiled? Can you tell if it has my new district or my old district? Do you happen to know?
Well, you know what? These happened to be redemptions in 2012. So,
we don't know whether they drew it under the current lines or under old lines. So,
you know what? I think it was the 10th. No, I don't. But I'm assuming.
But what is the 10th anyway? Regardless,
the 10th happened to have been 2,483 seniors. That renter claims in that district.
So it's either my new or my old, but regardless, over 2,000 people in one of my districts. Well, I tell you what's been interesting to me is there's so many issues that my constituents in my old district and my new district disagree on, and it puts me into an interesting situation sometimes. I can think on issues relating to transportation funding. There's a desire for the funding, but a complete disagreement on how to get to that funding, on issues related to, frankly, some agriculture and right to farm. It's been interesting being in the middle of all that. This issue has been interesting because starting back in February of this year, I had a number of senior centers from my new district come to my office and say, please don't cut this. And I said, well, tell me how it impacts you in Mexico, Missouri, or, you know, in Audrain County, because I kind of know the urban side of this. And they said that starting in January of every year, the seniors start asking when the folks are going to come to help them do their tax returns. And they get actually really long lines, Senator, of seniors who come in for assistance on their tax returns, because as you've already discussed with the senator from the 5th, this is one of the only kind of extra cash or expendable income that many of these seniors on fixed incomes have over the course of the year. And the folks from the senior center in several of the counties that I now represent in my new district were telling me that for the most part, the seniors who take this money in, this is the money that they use to give gifts to their grandkids over the course of the year. This is the money that they use maybe to do anything outside of just paying the bills.
Right.
And the thing that's frustrating for me is I totally understand where the senator from St. Charles is coming from.
Of
I understand
course.
Where the governor was coming from and proposing this. And I understand kind of what a weird set of circumstances brought us to this point. The reason that I have a really hard time with this piece of legislation, though, is no matter how I can rationalize why it makes sense to remove this, I still feel ultimately that it is a tax increase for those seniors who have been utilizing it.
I agree.
And I know that doesn't make sense in the big scheme of things, but for those seniors, the 2,000 some in my district, that go to their senior center once a year to have a volunteer help them fill out their tax forms, in their eyes, they're going to see it as a tax increase. And so I guess it just really puts me into an awkward place, because those things that the money is going to use to fund, if we cut out the program, those
right.
are important things.
They are. I mean,
good heavens, they're things
right.
I've been fighting for years on this Senate floor.
Right.
And so obviously I would like for that money to go to those other purposes. I also understand the rational argument about, you know, why is this money going to some and not others? Why are we giving a property tax rebate at all to people who don't own property? I understand all of those arguments. I get
right.
the rationality. But at the end of the day, I'm gonna have to be opposed to it, because for those seniors that are using it, this is the only expendable income that they get, their only disposable income over the course of the year. It's something that many of them depend on, and in their eyes, it's a tax increase, and because of that, I've got to side with them. Because frankly, when you talk about folks who don't have lobbyists, I mean,
right.
there's really no one lobbying
right.
on this issue, with the exception of, frankly, some folks on the other side of this who are interested in the money that they're going to get if... And you know, I've actually heard from a lot of the folks. Is this $52 or $53 million? Is that what I understand?
56.
56, okay. And you know, 26. I've talked to some of the folks who stand to benefit from getting this money
right.
if they, you know, if the change is made. And for the most part, they're all saying, you know what, we really need this, but we can't do this on the backs of low-income seniors, so we just prefer not to have the money. There are some exceptions. I think there's some for-profit groups out there that are looking forward to some sort of provider reimbursement.
Right.
And that's fine, too. I mean, they deserve
though.
To have their reimbursement at the level it should be reimbursed. But I just, ultimately, Senator, this is one of those things that gives me more heartburn than just about anything we've had to do, because I understand the rationale behind why we're doing it. I like the idea of what we're doing with the money, but at the end of the day, I can't take this money away from these low-income seniors that they've been counting on for so many years.
Right. I agree. I mean, I think you know, we share the same sentiment as far as the list. I think many of these things are things that I continually, of course, fight for and support in the budget process. I just have an issue with where the money happens to be coming from. I certainly wish... and I understand how difficult it is. I understand the difficult time we're having as far as the budget right now. There are just other ways and places, of course, that we need to be looking at taking this money from than, you know, from these seniors. And I think we've said over and over the past, 30, however long it's been now, that many times this is the only disposable income that a lot of these seniors have. And it is a grave disappointment. And I will tell you that a few years ago is any indication of the number of calls and the emotion that is going to be presented to us as legislators when they just had taken some of the seniors off that happened to be in nonprofit facilities.
Yeah.
You know, I really can't imagine, you know, the 104,000 seniors that happen to be benefiting from this rebate currently and those folks that we're going to hear from in these districts. And, you know, a lot of the districts have a number of a number of seniors. I think the 23rd district happens to have the least number with 1,098 seniors. But clearly they go from a district serving, having rebates cashed in of 1,098 all the way up to 9,773. So,
you know, it's interesting, those numbers that you are giving. When the issue came up, was it 2 years ago? No, it was longer than that. The issue you were talking about before with the nonprofits, when did that issue come up? How long ago was that?
Well, I've been here for 2 years. So probably, maybe 3 years. It may have been my last year, actually, in the House, I think.
Well, I remember several members.
It was a huge deal.
Yeah. Well, I remember several members of my caucus at that time being flooded with phone calls.
Right.
And I was curious, and so I said, you know, why is it that I'm not getting the same level of phone calls, if any, on this issue? And we did a little poking around. And my old senatorial district, frankly, the numbers were pretty low. Of folks who were taking advantage of this. And I think, Senator, if you take a look at the lines of what used to be the 10th District, you could probably see that, frankly, there's not a lot on you know, the way our district is drawn. There wouldn't be a lot of seniors who live in housing where they would qualify for this.